Hey, I got the privilege tonight of meeting Matthew L. Matthew L. is from Auburn, hopefully California, and from Placer County, possibly Roseville, if you know those areas of Southern California, I assume. When I was talking to him tonight, I found out he grew up in... Oh, wait, hold on here. I got that a little bit backwards. He grew up in Auburn, Roseville, near Placer County. Right now he's a resident of Meadow Vista, California. I'm not sure exactly where that is, but he is part of his home group is the Loomis Fellowship. And he's got a service position down there of being the special events coordinator. And hopefully by next May, he could have that ice cream social up and running again. And possibly, I was thinking, what a great idea for this group here as well. We might have to piggyback off of Matthew and copycat you, my friend. He's not only in AA, but he's in Al-Anon. And tonight I heard him say something kind of special. He said, pick up a sponsee and go to a meeting. You know, and I thought that was really cool because at our business meeting tonight, we kind of addressed that issue as well. And it's an important part of this program. So, yeah, Matthew's been sober for 5 days and 1 month and 20 years. Back in Y2K, August 25th, he found sobriety. And that was the year that I think I was drinking pretty heavily Y2K. So he made it through Y2K, and today I'm really grateful that he could come and share with us tonight. So we give a big Valley Group warm applause to Matthew L.
Thank you, Uncle Jim and Bill, for inviting me. I'm Matthew, and I'm an alcoholic. I want to welcome the people at the Recovery Rocks and the New Visions, too. Awesome. I'm glad you're here with us tonight. I like to start off by saying that my sobriety birthday is August 25th of the year 2000. So I'll be talking about that day in my story. And it's a special day I celebrate every year. Take a cake. Home group Loomis Fellowship. I work with a sponsor, and I'm currently working the steps with several men. And that's really the bright spot of my day, I tell you, working with others. I got a little bit of time here. You know what? I just want to set my timer so I'm cool. I want to observe the rules. So on with it. My first drunk was at my cousin's wedding. I was 13. It was on my birthday, actually, at a wedding reception out behind a barn, and had a bottle of champagne all to myself. And I liked the effect produced by alcohol. I'll just say that from the beginning. I got really drunk, had a lot of fun, and I got away with it. No one really knew that, you know, my cousin did because he had one too, but... you know, I watched all the older boys, I watched my dad, and they were great role models for me on how to drink and act cool. And so I was always chasing what they had. And my father, I remember at Christmas time, we'd drive around to all of his friends' house, and my dad would open the trunk of the car, and there'd be a bottle, and we would bring it into the house, and my dad would sit down and have a drink with his friend, and his friend would have a bottle, and they would exchange, and then we'd go out and put that bottle in the trunk of the car in the case that we had, and we, you know, maybe it was the holidays, and that's what we did. And great role model. I love my dad. We'd go out to dinner, and we'd sit down as with all the kids and the moms and dads at the table as a family. And everybody would have their drinks. The adults would have their beverages, but the kids would have their Roy Rogers and their Shirley Temples for the girls and the Roy Rogers for the boys. I don't know if you remember that with the cherry in it. So I had that opportunity to find out what it was about in high school, you know, just regular parties. And after high school, I went to Chico State in 1987. A Playboy magazine named them the number one party school in America. And so, of course, I didn't have a clue to what was going on until I got there. But when I did finally arrive, that was the best news I had ever heard, really. It became a good time for about 5 years. I learned how to drink on a daily basis and without any really consequences to my actions. I had a lot of fun. And I did graduate. I did get a diploma. I want to point that out. I ended up moving back to Rockland, where I grew up, and went to credentialing school and got me a teaching credential. And I became a three-fifths teacher at Bella Vista High School in Fair Oaks, California. And that was like I had arrived. You know, I got a job. It wasn't full-time. I was coaching sports. But all the while, after school, we'd head down to this local bar, Brother Oliver's, or sometimes the Hacienda in Folsom. But that was the place after work. And by then, I was into outside issues. And on Friday nights, I'd get really drunk. And I would find outside issues and get sober, and then continue drinking all weekend long. And that was my story. I drink all weekend and then go to work during the week, try to lay off, and then drink hard and use hard on the weekends. And I picked up a drinking partner, and she kept up with me until she couldn't. And then she decided she had a problem, and so we tried to get her some help and got her an appointment to see a doctor for her problem. And a day came when we were supposed to go to that appointment, or she was supposed to go, and I didn't go with her. She was supposed to go. I just assumed she would, but she didn't. And when I got home from work, it was a Friday, and I remember it was a 3-day weekend, and I said, "Well, how did your appointment go with the doctor?" And when she told me she didn't go, I got upset, and I shamed her, and I got mad, and I was like, "How dare you? We waited so long to find out that, you know, what problem you might have." And she got really upset, and she grabbed her purse, and she walked outside through the front door and slammed it. And I heard some tires squealing out in the driveway. And the next thing you know, my car was in my house, and she had driven my car into our house. And she got out of my car, and she threw her purse over her shoulder, and she went out the hole that she drove through, and she went out and got in her car and drove off. And I was so pissed, I called the cops, and I wanted to see her arrested. You know, our relationship had escalated from verbal confrontations to this. Never anything physical. It was more or less this one big shebang. And the policemen, there was two of them there at the time, and I knew them from high school. I played football with one of them, and they were Rockland police officers, and they were laughing. And they said, "You know, Matt, there's no law that says you can't drive your own car into your own house. So she hasn't broken any laws. So we can't, you know, go after her." And so this is where my alcohol had gotten me, my failed relationship. I filed for divorce soon after that. It was evident that I wasn't going to. That was very, very, it just changed everything, we'll just say. And soon after that, I ended up getting hurt on the job. I was teaching PE, and I got out on the playground with some students, and I was teaching them golf, and one of them had got around behind me when I wasn't focused on the kids. I was focused on the golf balls, and one of the kids hit a golf ball, and it hit me in the face. And when it did, it knocked me, or it didn't knock me out, but it gave me a concussion, knocked some teeth. Split my I have gone from the inside with a plastic surgeon and stuff, but it was a pretty bad accident. And I was living alone, and I had a bottle of pain pills, and I had some time off work, and I was going through a divorce, and I was at the union hall talking to the lawyer there about my divorce, and my union rep said that they were going to go ahead and give me the rest of the school year off because of my injury, and that I could have my job back when I the following school year. There was, that was in like February or March, so there was April, May, and June. So I took that, and that was awesome because it was like the best summer ever. I was an alcoholic with total freedom, and I had every excuse to drink. And I ended up moving my connection and his wife into my house, and the party was on. And for like the next 4 months, it was good times. Came time to go back to school, and I just I was in no shape to do that, and so I had to go down to there and to the reunion, or to the actually the school union office, and I ended up resigning my position. I walked away from my career, and they gave me an option there. What do you want to do with your 401k? And I said, well, how much? And they said, about $28,000. I said, well, I'll just take a check. And I cashed it out, and that was my thinking, my best thinking. And I bought me like a fifth wheel trailer, and I had a truck, and I had these grandiose alcoholic ideas that I was going to travel around the United States and see all the national parks and, you know, go to Yellowstone and all that stuff. And the furthest I ever got really with that trailer was this lake right out here near us called Campfire West Lake. It's this little man-made lake, and it's, we'll just say that it's not very far, like 30 minutes from where I live. So that's usually I get a big laugh when I'm talking around the people here where I live. Anyway, I did a lot of drinking there. I left my trailer out there, and I had a house in Rockland still, and my connection lived in Rio Linda. So I was, it was like a triangle. I would go out to Rio Linda to connect with my people and then check on my house and then go back up to the lake. And it was just, that's what my life became. And in the next 2 years, I started getting picked up on DUI charges, possession charges, possession of other people's property charges. And the list continued, and I was out on bail, and I remember I had been drinking all day out at the river by the airport on a houseboat, and it was August the 24th of the year 2000. I remember being completely drunk and sunburned and driving down to, it's called the Monkey Bar, it's on Capitol Avenue downtown Sacramento, and I went to my connection's house there. And spent the evening with them, and filled my prescription, if you know what I mean, and I got sober. And I was partying with the best, I thought, and I would be back the next night and just keep my seat warm. And on August the 25th, I showed up at my court date at Department 13 at the Placer County Jail in Auburn. My lawyer met me there, and I remember going in. I was hungover from the night before. I still smelled like booze. I know I did. I hadn't slept in like 3 days. And I think I had something to eat, but it wasn't much before I went in there. And I remember the judge saying to the bailiff, we have 14 charges here for Mr. Linton. Let's go ahead and remand him into custody until we can work all this out. And the next thing you know, I was being handcuffed and taken away. And I was, at this point in my sobriety, day one, I didn't think I had a problem, and I was in complete denial of all of this. Like, you people don't understand. And they did. They really did understand. But I celebrate that day every year, August 25th of the year 2000. I spent the next seven weeks in the Placer County Jail. I fought my case. And while I'm there fighting my case, these people would come in on Wednesday nights, and they'd bring an AA meeting in. And I started going to that meeting and getting real friendly with the guys coming in and talking to them. And I like to say in my pitch, if you're a hospitals and institutions volunteer, thank you for your service to Alcoholics Anonymous, because that's where I found the message was there. And so you're doing a great service. They told me when I got out, there'd be meetings when I could go, and there I could find people like them. And so I had hope. That gave me some hope. I ended up getting 5 years on all my charges, and I ended up getting sent off to the Department of Corrections. And I participated in meetings there. regularly at three different penitentiaries where I was at. But I did parole, and the day I paroled, 3 years, 8 months later, I was on my front porch when I rolled up. It was my parole officer, and it was this lady, and she handed me my ticket. We call it the gift card here in our area. But that was, I had to go to two AA meetings a week, and I had to pee for her twice a month, and I had to go through counseling and some other stuff and take care of all of that. And I never missed one of those appointments. I tested clean every single time. I went to those meetings every week. I got my little thing signed, and I discharged my number in 11 months. It's actually 12 after the paperwork came through. And they sent me a little card in the mail I can carry in my wallet. You know, you're no longer on parole. And I'm thinking, I used to carry that around for some reason. But, you know, anyway, I got active with the Loomis Fellowship. I lived in Rockland. But when I went to the Loomis Fellowship, I thought maybe people in Loomis wouldn't know who I was because people in Rockland might know. And those people in that meeting, they loved me from the day I walked in the door. They cared about me. They wanted to know who I was, and they reached out their hand and they showed me love. And I like to say that those people in that meeting taught me how to love others, because I was really like a porcupine. I had a lot of pricklies. Didn't you know, I just came out of prison. I'm all this and a bag of chips, and I'm supposed to be this really bad person. And I felt shame. I felt guilt. I felt just terrible inside. I had never worked any steps, mind you. I worked them on the wall. I saw them up there on the meeting, on the blind. But that's you know, if you work the steps in a meeting off the wall, you have an off-the-wall program. And for the first, you know, 3 years and a half, that was what I had. And I found me a sponsor. He took me through the steps, my home group, at his kitchen table every Thursday night. Got through those, and, you know, I had a spiritual experience where some of that guilt and shame and remorse, it started to lift off of me. I met a whole new group of people that I could hang out with, and I wanted to hang out with them. I knew I couldn't go back to my old friends. And so I was a meeting secretary, the cop person, you know, all those fun things. I ended up at my seventh year of sobriety. There was a position for general service representative at another meeting. And, you know, I'm Mr. AA by now. I've tried to strong arm several guys through the steps. No one's ever really stayed sober that I've worked the steps with. So I was kind of bored with the whole, let's read the book and sit down and talk. I didn't have a lot of success with that. So I got into this GSR thing. And then I was invited to one of these, assemblies. And I was blown away. There were like 200 plus people there from all over California, and they were listening to the delegate give his report back at a post-conference assembly. And I listened to this person, which I didn't even know what a delegate was. I didn't understand what he was even talking about, the General Service Conference. And he was sharing with this group of people, and I just all of a sudden got totally into what they were talking about. And I ended up going to all those district meetings. We met at the Auburn Fellowship in what was called the Dungeon. It was like two floors underneath the liquor outlet. And that was where I was introduced to general service, really. And I went to Anchorage, Alaska, because our DCM couldn't go. He just had a baby, and so I was elected alternate DCM at our elections. And so they sent me to Anchorage, Alaska, to represent District 21 of California Northern Interior. That's a whole story in itself, but what I can tell you is I had a spiritual experience at that event, which lit a fire inside of me. When I came home, I ended up, you know, that was called PRASA, Pacific Regional Alcoholics Anonymous Service Assembly. And sharing that with a group of people, trying to articulate what happened to me there, was super hard, but they saw it had changed me. And I get choked up thinking about it just today. because it did. It changed me for the better. Anyway, I the gap. Bridging the Gap is a temporary contact for people coming out of treatment where the New Vision people are and the rocks, recovery rocks. In the first 24 hours of your release, we would have an alcoholic meet you at an AA meeting and introduce you around and get you acquainted with everybody. And I can't do H&I, at least I can't go into the jail or the prison because of my criminal background. So I was doing Bridging the Gap, and I still do it today. It's a 12-step call. So if you haven't done a 12-step call, it's a lot of fun. You go in twos and threes, never alone, and you work with alcoholics. But anyway, I got to be the California Northern Interior Area Bridging the Gap chair. So I ended up getting to go to a national event and learning all about Bridging the Gap. All over the United States and Canada, we have a national workshop. This next year, it's going to be in Chicago or outskirts of Chicago. Last year, it was in Sacramento. But I got to learn about Alcoholics Anonymous on another level. We do hospitals and institutions. In other states, they do treatment and corrections. They have two committees. We just have the one. It predates the General Service Conference, and I like it that way. So, anyway. I met a lady in the program during this time. My wife, her name was Betsy, and she was saying, "You're gone every weekend, or you're always off doing something." And she was always upset because she never got to go. And I just said, "Well, I guess you're going to have to become a GSR or something to some group so you can be invited to go with us." And so the next thing you know, she's a GSR, and then she's the alternate DCM, and she's the DCM of our district here in Auburn. And I ended up getting elected to an area position. I was your area registrar, and then I was your area secretary, and she was an area registrar. And after 10 years of marriage, we had it going on. We just got our own house together. You know, life is really good. My business is really good. My sobriety is really good. I had life by the tail. My wife, she'd come home with a problem from she was at a women's retreat, and she had a problem with her foot. We went in to have an x-ray, and then it was an MRI, and then it was a CAT scan, and then it was cancer. And I was in four and a half months, she passed away after treatment and everything. It was just too aggressive and too fast, and my whole life just, and up until this point, I have been giving to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've never really received from Alcoholics Anonymous. And through that experience, I still receive today so much love and compassion, and just people reaching out to me specifically and to share their experience, strength, and hope with me, but to help me get through the grieving process of losing my wife and all that comes with that. You know, it's been 3 years since she passed, and I mean, it's still a big hole in my life, but it's okay. Life goes on, and what it has taught me is that every day counts. And if I don't say anything else that you don't hear, or I want you to hear this, is what I'm trying to say, is that every day really counts. It has meaning, and based on your spiritual maintenance and your spiritual condition, you know, to be of maximum service to others is really that's my mantra every day. Live, be in the present, love every minute, hold on to every conversation and relationships that we build in here, inside this room, and outside of this room. The relationships have meaning. So if anything else, Alcoholics Anonymous taught me how to be a real human being and show that I care about me, and I care about you. Enough of that. So I'll move on and say I currently get to serve you as your California Northern Area, Area 7 chair. So I am the chairman of the business portion of all of your interior area business, I guess. So do you have a GSR for your group? hear at this one? Does anybody know? Sonia? Oh, no? Oh, well, see, representation. So every group has a voice, and you have a voice. So I encourage you guys to have a talk about getting a GSR for your group. How much time do I got here? I got a few minutes. You know, today I'm going to get to right now is this is really a tough time for a lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous and outside. There's a lot of people drinking, as we all know. We see it all around us, and especially with being locked in, isolated, away from people, the alcoholics are coming out. And I want to encourage each one of you to be ready to do a 12-step call at any time. 5 months ago, a couple people on this call had called and asked for a phone number for the meeting for my home group, and I ended up picking it up and talking with them and met with them, and today they have almost 6 months of sobriety. And that has nothing to do with me. That has everything to do with their willingness to change their mind and to pick up these tools that are set at their feet, and for them to pick them up and to continue going to meetings, working with their sponsors, and just reaching out to other alcoholics. I get to see the program of Alcoholics Anonymous working in other people's lives. And that's huge. I mean, that happened 5 months ago. Just in this last 2 weeks, I had a guy, had my phone number from a long time ago, like 6 months ago, 8 months ago, call me the other day and said he's ready to stop drinking and start working out of the book. So we set a time. It was a Sunday morning at like 9 o'clock, and we sat down and started reading out of the book. I do the same thing with, four other gentlemen, usually on Thursday nights and Friday mornings. I read out of the big book. We read out of Drop the Rock. And another sponsor and I are started on the journey of, the history book. Anyway, my brain went straight out. The opportunity to read with another alcoholic is a solution I found that has gotten me out of my head. And it helps me when I'm working with somebody else to remember my purpose, why I'm here. Because I'm busy serving a lot of other alcoholics, going to a lot of different meetings, talking with them behind the scenes, making plans. Remember, I used to drive around all these places, and now we just do Zoom meetings, you know. And if you're thinking that this is just a passing fad, I'm going to tell you the truth, that I understand that Zoom is here to stay. I don't think it's going anywhere. And so this is our new interface of Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, meetings will come back. Yeah, they are. They're here. I go to Tuesday night to a men's meeting out in the church parking lot. But for now, this is where it's at, and I don't think it's going to go away. So I'm really glad, though, that we have this technology and we can still share with each other. let me think what else. I have a lot to say, and being of service to my area, being a part of Bridging the Gap, having relationships with other alcoholics, has really given me life, gave me meaning to my life. I at one point thought my life was over. Had I known that it had just begun, and then after these last 3 years, I really think that I've lived a whole lifetime in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm in my 20th year, and I'm moving, 21st year. I'm moving on to my next journey in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's an awesome feeling to understand what to be happy, joyous, and free. Okay, so I'd like to end my pitch with this part that I told you about a little bit about my court. And my best friend, he was my crime partner, and he was the person that I ran around with the most. We did everything together. And he testified against me at my trial. And it was on his testimony. I know I was convicted of 5 felonies and did my time. And so As you know, in our big book, it talks about resentment, the number one offender. You can say that I had a resentment towards my friend. His name is Ken. And Ken, he did what he needed to do. And trust me, every day I thought about him. I couldn't wait for the day I got out because I was going to look for him. And that's what I did. I borrowed the neighbor's truck, and I'd drive around. And I didn't tell anybody about this. I didn't tell my sponsor. I didn't tell my friends. I didn't tell my wife. I told nobody. That was something I kept deep down inside. And I looked. I looked everywhere. And I never did. I thought I saw him one time, but never did find him. And I can tell you, leaving the home group, it was Wednesday night, right before Christmas. I was at a gas station in Rockland. I'd leave my dog at my mom's house, and I would be traveling there to get gas on the way home to Meta Vista. And I pull into this gas station. It's raining. And I'm watching this homeless guy digging through the trash in the next island over from me. And he had dumped out the trash can, and he was, you know, organizing the trash. He wasn't looking for cans and bottles because those were over here, and he had paper here. And I started looking at this guy, and his face was all overgrown. His hair was overgrown. His clothes were super dirty. He was living in the bush. And I kept staring at him as I put my pump away, and I went around and I got in my truck. I turn around and I look, and the guy looks at me, and I see it's my friend. It's my friend Ken. You see, he got a stipend of money, a little place to live, but he also got some mental health treatment for his testimony. And they gave him electric shock therapy, and they took him. They really did a number on him. We would call that a wet brain today. And mind you, I didn't know what to do. I'm sitting here thinking, okay, tough guy. That's what I'm saying to myself. Let's jump out and beat him up, you know. And it's like, no. You know, 15 years of Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me to have compassion for him. But I was in such a state of flux, I didn't know what to do. So I drove off. I just left. And I'm driving home, and I call my sponsor, and I tell him, hey, I got to tell you this story about my friend Ken, who testified against me. And he was like, I've never heard of this guy. And I said, yeah, I know. He's never appeared on any of my four steps, and I've never shared about him on any fifth step. And my sponsor made me come to his house the next day and sit down and work a fourth and fifth step on my buddy there. And what came out as a result of that was I was to pray for my friend Ken until I could forgive him. And so the first couple prayers were not like, I didn't know what I was praying for or what, you know, I knew that I needed to unload all of this that was down inside of me, and I needed to give it to God. So I did. And for the next couple months, I prayed for him. I thought about him a lot. And I was coming home from the racetrack meeting one night. It was raining. And I remember, I left the meeting early because I wanted to get home. I was tired, and I swung by my mom's house and got my dog, and I went to that gas station to get some gas before I went home. And sitting there pumping my gas, right before that, I should say, I prayed. I prayed to God, and I said, you know, God, I'd really like to have some clarity on this issue with my friend Ken. I've been praying for him, and I just would like some clarity. And I'm pumping gas at the same gas station, and here my friend walks through the dark in the rain, and I can see him in the distance, and I'm hollering at him. I'm yelling his name, Ken, Ken, hey, it's Matthew over here. And he looks, and he looks, and he comes over to me, and I tried to talk to him, and he was very standoffish. And mind you, I haven't seen this guy in quite a while. He recognizes me, and I start talking to him, and I realize that he's really a mess. And I ask him how he's doing, what he was up to, and he's like, oh, he's organizing the trash, and the service station helps him out. And I, you know, he sees my truck and my dog, and I got all my nice clothes on, and this is my best friend, you know, from years ago. And I'm looking at him, and I realize that this is my opportunity. And so I say to him, you know, I got to thank you. I tell him, Ken, what you did for me, testifying, you saved my life. You did what any friend would do for another friend. You told the truth. And here I wanted you to lie. And for what you did, you saved my life. Because you should see my life today. I'm sober. I got a wife. I got a house. I got a family that loves me. I got a business that's thriving. I have employees and I have families that count on me. I'm in service with all these. I got these people at these meetings that I go to that know me all over the place. I've been all over the United States and Canada and, you know, just crazy. And I'm trying to articulate to this man that he saved my life, and I said thank you. Oh, my timer. Well, I can tell you, I told him right there. I said, is there something I can do for you? Can I go take you over to this Denny's? Let's get something to eat. And he's like, no, I don't want any dinner. I'm good. I'm like, how about a sweatshirt? It's cold. It's raining. And he's like, no, I'm good. I got the one I like. And shoes, or, you know, there was nothing I could do. And I remember I gave him my business card. And I'm like, here, he doesn't even have a phone. But, you know, at least he had my phone number. He left and we parted ways, and it was good. I had my moment. And you see, by praying for my friend Ken, I was able to forgive him. But from that moment that I had with my friend, I was able to forgive myself, because that was what I was holding on to the most, was the resentment about him, but it was really about me. And to have that opportunity to share that with him, and to, that was a, you know, I like to say that I love the effect produced by Alcoholics Anonymous. It gave a lot of clarity to that issue. And today my friend Ken, he actually lives on the off ramp at I-80 and Rockland Road on the eastbound side. Vicky and I were just by there and saw him about a month ago. So he's still around. But when I do see him, I try to stop if I can, and it's safe, and I get out of my truck and I try to talk to him. I walk up to him, give him a hug if I can, but let him know that I'm around and I still see him. But he lives out on the street. And Alcoholics Anonymous gives you this opportunity, the same opportunity that I have, to work with your sponsor on any of those resentments that you have, maybe that you haven't confessed or brought out to anybody's attention. I'm going to let you know that that was a really hard situation for me to deal with. And today, after all that, it wasn't that hard. I just made it really hard in my mind. And you can do the same thing. If you have something, please, I encourage you to talk with your sponsor or talk with another alcoholic. Maybe you don't want to share it with your sponsor. Whatever. But get it out. Because understanding that freedom that comes from that lifting of all that guilt, that shame, that anger, that resentment, lifting off of my chest, I don't have to carry it around anymore. I get to walk happy, joyous, and free. I mean, it feels really good. And, you know, that's what I do now, is that I just share what I do every day. I go to meetings. I talk with other alcoholics. I pray to the God of my understanding. It was shared that I'm in the other program, Al-Anon. I've celebrated 3 years. I've learned so much in that program. And I told, after that, I get to go to ACA, Adult Children of Alcoholics. And I'm like, oh, Lord, what next? But, you know, I'm really happy that the person to have any friends in this program, and I don't know, just a pleasure to be here tonight to share my experience, strength, and hope. And thank you for allowing me to be of service to your meeting. So, thank you.